Welcome to the National Lewis University Discover You podcast. People have defied gender norms for hundreds of years now. New terms have been created to describe anyone who defies those norms in any way. And one of them is the term transgender. The transgender community in the United States has become increasingly more visible and more controversial. My name is Keith Baltimore, and in this episode of Discover You, I'll be joined by an NLU staff member who is a part of the transgender community. She will be educating us on the life of someone who identifies as transgender and the kind of obstacles that are faced by a transgendered person.
We aren't trans because we have transitioned. Rather, we are born trans and therefore we transition.
I was wondering if the goal of the trans community is to say, we are, as you said, you are who you are, then does it matter if there's a distinction between being a trans woman or a woman? Because if people distinguish, you know, is the goal to be seamless? Is the goal to be fully seen as a woman? Or is a, you know what I'm saying? So is it enough to say I'm a trans woman? But no, is the goal to say I am a woman? And that part of your history, that, you know, the other parts of your history is with regard to biology, is that addressed? Is that to be set aside? How is that to be viewed?
So I think importantly, I can say I am a woman. And I can say I am a trans woman. And honestly, it is the same as being able to say I am a woman and saying I am a short woman, or yes, I am a woman with a disability, mm-hmm, or I am a woman who grew up in Virginia, you know, that all of these things are kinds of women. In my case, you know, being able to say I am a woman, it's something that I am able to say without ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Being a trans woman is not a different thing from a woman. It is instead a variety of, mm-hmm, woman. Trans is an adjective applied to woman, the same as many other kinds of women that there are.
Now, is there some need behind saying, no, I am a trans woman, even though others may see you or perceive you to be a woman?
Is it similarly something that would be in some regards negative if my transness became, yeah, entirely invisible?
Yeah.
And to that, I think that is something that varies a lot by person, because for some people, being able to just be seen as our gender and our transness, not even be known unless it was something that we chose to disclose, mm-hmm, would be something that would be ideal, because we wouldn't have to worry about all the different ways that being trans is uncomfortable or dangerous, right?
Right.
But there are other people who would feel like, okay, there are other people who would not want for their trans identity to be erased and who would remain very out trans, even if they were unclockable, which is another word for you that sometimes get used, people will say you're clockable if people are having any question about what they think your gender is one way or the other. So not necessarily being a trans person and people see you as a trans person, but like people are clocking your gender instead of not thinking about it if they are seeing you and having some kind of uncertainty in their minds based on their expectations of what gender is supposed to be.
There's been a great awareness around the trans community. There's also been awareness around the breaking of the binary.
Sure.
This idea that no, there are more. There's not just male and female gender. That there are others, and not to kind of stay on this whole. I use the word clockable, and I also heard someone say stealth.
Yeah, and some people use that. I'm not a fan of that term because stealth for me implies like trickery, and I think there's a lot of dangerous rhetoric. No, I'm not saying that like some trans people use the word stealth, but I personally don't like the term. I understand why they use it, but I'm not a fan of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for basically not needing to disclose your trans status because people just see you as your gender.
So that's kind of what I'm getting at. This whole idea of just seeing you as you and not being able to say, it's imperative that you see me as the gender that I am. Because there's also, as I'm hearing you explain these things to us, that there is definitely your gender, but it's also just who I am, which can also kind of be above this whole idea of just my gender. And I'm wondering, again, for someone who is just walking down the street and they just want to be themselves, as they're living in their skin, walking down the street, living their life, this whole, the importance around, do you see my gender? As opposed to like, it doesn't matter what my gender is, like what's behind the goal of awareness around the trans community? Because we're raising people, it's a conversation people are having. We're having for a reason, and it's a very good thing. And I'm wondering like the trajectory of where this is taking us. And I believe it's all good things. I'm just saying, I'm just thinking down the road, okay, where is this going?
Okay.
Are you following me?
So now, all right. I, as a trans woman, I'm someone who is on the binary. And so when we're talking about the gender binary or the sex binary, it's worth realizing that biological sex is much more complicated than what we learned in middle school. In middle school, you learned XX and XY, and that means female and male. And oh my gosh, if you get into the real biology of this, it's a lot more complicated, as most things are compared to whatever you learned in middle school, right?
Yes.
Most things in the world are more complicated than whatever we learn in seventh grade. So sex, as I was just saying, there's a lot of aspects of biological sex are on a continuum rather than having two discrete groups. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things between what we like to think of as two discrete groups go ways that are much more complex than just one or the other in a lot more bodies than we usually think of. And here's some stuff that I was reading about recently that we'll see if it makes it into the final cut or not. But I was reading about how the institution of binary sex to the extent that it became in the 20th century and the institution of anti-transness and homophobia winds up being deeply entrenched in the history of American eugenics
explain to those, if you can, briefly, eugenics, for those who do not. This is a fascinating area and disturbing, but go ahead.
Okay, so eugenics are
explain it together.
Stone of white supremacy. Eugenics, it literally means like good genes. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that white people were the ones with the good genes, able-bodied white people. Certain white people more than others, but overwhelmingly white people. And if you look to the early 20th century, the eugenics movement gained steam around let's prevent people of color from being able to reproduce. Mm-hmm. And of course, it reached its height in Germany, where they were like, let's go ahead and just murder everybody who isn't Aryan, which is, of course, a totally made up category. It doesn't make any sense. But now see, American eugenics was quite well developed as an ideology, as politics, and people want to forget about that. And so after World War II, when people got to see what the endpoint of that ideology was, the eugenics movement had to clean up its act a little bit and use a different kind of language in order to succeed. And so the language shifted from quite as much of a focus to preventing the bad gene people from reproducing, although it was still there. But there started being a greater shift on white reproduction and on making sure that white women were reproducing, that you had the good genes propagating themselves. And so you wound up with these rhetorics that put an extreme stigma on anything that was not a very particular kind of sex / gender role. Mm. That you had this like women, I mean, you've heard this idea of women are supposed to be, you know, housewives in the kitchen reproducing. And, you know, that of course, like the nuclear family is not the traditional family at all. That's not the way that families have been traditionally.
You're exactly
in history,
right.
Or American history. You know, it's like there's more to transphobia and to misogyny and to all of these things. There's many other factors getting involved too. But when we talk about American history, it's stunning how much of it ties back to white supremacy. You know, transphobia and its particular shape in the United States has part of its roots in white supremacy and in eugenics because of the rhetorical move that they found necessary to make in order to become more palatable in post-war America.
A trans woman of color basically kicked off the modern gay rights movement. But now I have to wonder, is the gay community, the I guess the traditional idea or perception of what the gay community is that community, you know, embracing, supporting the trans community in an appropriate way? What is your response to that? Like just the trans community and the gay community, and I hate to say it that way as if there's a distinction, but people clearly make one. And I think probably in some ways there is a necessary distinction because, and forgive me for kind of going off, but I know of many people who are trans and also not a part of the gay community.
Right, because if you're a trans woman, so if I only dated men, then I would not be, I would not be L or G or B, I would just be T. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm trans and I date men and women and anyone else too, that would make me pansexual. Yeah. But that there absolutely is the division. And historically, it is not coincidental that the T has come last. Now, of course, we've added more, you know, letters to the acronym, and rightly so. But, you know, it is not coincidental that it's LGBT. Mm. I think that in recent years, there has been much more coalition movement. The movement for trans folks in the last 10 years, the last 5 years, is seismic as compared with what has come before. Mm-hmm. The answer, I think, is until recently, not very much necessarily, but I think that has changed in very significant ways just in recent years. Mm.
Speaking of life being complicated or not complicated, has the awareness of pronouns, has that been helpful, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm just glad that people are normalizing that pronouns are not a thing that you automatically know about someone, but instead they are something that someone is able to tell you. Mm. So because I am on the binary and increasingly, although still clockable, taken as a woman if someone just sees me. So people assuming she, her, for me, is correct. Mm. However, there's a lot of people who are they, them, or some other set of pronouns that are unusual. If they are just a gender, they're like, I don't have a gender, some people say. Mm-hmm. I think it is helpful that we are normalizing that pronouns are something that you learn about someone, same as you learn their name.
Yes, completely understand that. So let's say, Drea, you have an allergic reaction and you have to go to the hospital. What's that like? What might happen during that kind of experience?
Well, it's important to emphasize that we're here in Chicago when you ask that question, and that we have laws in Illinois that give us some protection. Now, you know, am I going to, depending on where I go in Chicago, is it possible that I'm going to get some kind of microaggression? Maybe. But am I going to get medical care? Probably yes, right? You know, so whereas in a lot of the country, there are not protections for us in law. And the Trump administration took some actions to make it so that doctors are more legally allowed to say, I don't want to treat a trans person and it's not against the law. I mean, it's one thing for a doctor to not have the expertise in trans patients and not be your primary doctor to go to for your hormones or whatnot. That's one thing. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you come in with, you know, your legs separated from your body because you got run over and you're mm-hmm. bleeding out. Mm-hmm. Is it legal for the doctor to say, I don't like trans people, so I'm going to let this person bleed out? And some states are trying to make it so that would be the case, or not some states as a whole, some politicians in some states. The Trump administration, so at the moment you could still sue a doctor for that, but the Trump administration took steps to make it so that it would be not forbidden by federal law.
It makes me think about the recent legislation, I guess it was like 35 bills were introduced in state legislatures that would limit or prohibit transgendered women from competing in women's athletics. And you and I kind of talked about this a little bit before, but what really struck me is that these bills are all focused on trans women participating in women's athletics, not a trans man. And I was just like, huh. And share a little bit more. And again, this is slightly rhetorical because I think I'm already there, but about your thoughts about that legislation and your thinking around this resistance to including trans women in women's athletics?
Right. So I think that some of my question for all of this is, why do we think that a gender binary is our best way for organizing athletics to begin with? And when they craft this legislation that is about keeping trans women out of women's athletics, it's crafted with this idea that they, of course, are seeing trans women, in this case, trans girls, really, you know, but since targeted at schools in large part, but they're seeing trans girls as boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they are working with this assumption that boys in basically everything have an advantage over girls. And so if you let a quote unquote boy in, then this person will just stomp the girls at everything because mm-hmm. boys are just naturally better. So when we were talking before, I brought up how in the Olympics, they used to subject women to exams before going into sports to make sure that they were really women, which is, I mean, wow, that's great. That sounds real respectful and dignified. Anyway, so they would, because they were concerned that countries would put men into the women's Olympics. And if any country did that, then that country would win. Well, there's only one time in the history of the Olympics when a country actually did do that. He didn't even place. He did not place. He did not get a gold. He did not get a silver. He did not get a bronze. I don't remember where he came in. He was behind all the women, you mm-hmm. know? So this idea that, so there are certain things where we wind up with perhaps relative advantages in certain kinds of things based on average, on like broad averages. But even there, when we're talking about trans girls, they're on hormones. They're not getting a test, like if testosterone bequeaths you an advantage, they're not getting it because they're on estrogen.
Yeah.
So to begin with, it's just multiple layers because there's the transphobia where you're saying that the trans girl is a boy. And there's the, I don't know biology, because you're like, well, this person is getting a testosterone advantage. Not really. And three, you're assuming that boys are better than girls at everything. Yes. And guess what? They're not.
So I'm curious to know what inspires you and what do you see as the future for you, for the trans community?
Let's see, what inspires me? I mean, because the topic is transness, I feel like I need to, you know, speak to that. Whereas, of course, there's a lot of things from a lot of different directions that inspire me. I'll go ahead and talk about the Pride March that we had this past year. This was not a parade. There was a march, a Pride March that centered Black lives and trans lives this summer through Boys Town. And that march was led, it was led by Black trans women, who we said before that these are the people who are the most vulnerable in many ways and least frequently given prominence or roles of leadership within white cis gay male centered Boys Town Pride. And at the end of that march, there were speakers. And they did a moment of silence for the trans women murdered in the last year. And they started saying the names of the women who had been taken from us, and then had a person who was of that gender and rough age and racial background dance to the center of this massive circle that we were sitting in the middle of a Boys Town intersection. And they didn't get through all of the names because it would have taken too long. Mm-hmm. But when they'd gotten through a bunch of them, they asked us to look at the vibrant women in front of us and to imagine a world where we were not afraid of their being taken from us. Mm-hmm. To think of our world as one where they are supposed to exist. And we know that they are going to get to without being afraid. And that was profoundly moving to me. Because although as a white trans woman, I am at less risk of actual murder, I have faced violence and I have kind of gone through life with the assumption or with the learning being told in a variety of ways that the universe is not a place where I am supposed to exist. And where I came around to prior to that pride was saying, hey, universe, I'm flipping the bird at you because I'm existing anyway. but that event, that day was a massive paradigm shift for me because that was my experience being confronted with the idea that I am supposed to exist. And that was an inspiration that I am really taking with me like none other since. I want to name the organization that was especially prominent in the lead in that, Brave Space Alliance. It is a Black trans woman run organization that is for supporting our community in Chicago. I feel like I do not want to do a disservice by failing to name that spectacular organization.
Well, that does it for us. Thanks a lot for listening. And thanks to our guests for taking the time to educate us about the transgendered community. We hope you'll join us for the next Discover You.